Eureka Report is a weekly public affairs program
providing independent media coverage
of environmental and ecological studies
with a focus on local, state, and regional people, issues, and events
in order to foster open discussion
of human relationships with nature and the earth
and to encourage you to take personal responsibility for living sustainably in the world.
Eco Report is produced by an independent team of volunteers
working at the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
And financially supported by listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to Eco Report. For WFHB, I'm Patrick Callanan.
And I'm Sarah Callanan. For our feature today, we will hear a WFHB reporter, Sophie Hall, talk about the bright future for energy in Indiana. That's coming up later in the program. First, your environmental headlines. A group of Martinsville, Indiana, residents and business owners, called a community action group, is seeking to persuade others to allow federal officials to test the air in houses, apartment buildings, and businesses that might be contaminated with the toxic chemicals tetrachloroethylene and trichloroethylene from a Superfund site that was formerly a dry cleaning business. A 38-acre plume of the chemicals extends to the city's municipal well field and drinking water plant. Exposure to both chemicals is linked to cancer, liver damage, neurological disorders, and other serious illnesses. The chemicals, in gaseous form, enter structures through a process called vapor intrusion, testing for which will be starting early next year. The testing has to be done in the winter because houses are closed up and the poisonous gases aren't being diluted by outside air from open windows or air conditioners. The EPA needs permission from property owners to test in the plume area, which contains 230 structures. So far, only 50 home or business owners have allowed their properties to be tested. For rentals, the EPA needs permission from the property owners and tenants. Community Action Group member and plume resident Marianne Schell reported that people don't want their properties tested because they're suspicious of the government. Schell said residents are more likely to get the EPA into their homes to test for contamination if a community action group member is present to reassure them. Remediation of the plume will begin in 2023 at the earliest. Both testing and mitigation at homes are free. In cases of contamination, the EPA will install a radon fan to vent the chemicals above the home's roofline, permitting them to break down and dissipate in the sunlight.
WFYI reports that Indiana will award a group of 8 electric utilities more than $5.5 million to set up charging stations for electric vehicles across the state. The money comes from the settlement with Volkswagen over its Clean Air Act violations. The Indiana Utility Group will build 61 DC fast charging stations, which can charge electric cars in as little as 20 minutes. There are about 40 high-powered public charging stations in the state. More than half of them are in Indianapolis. The stations are expected to be completed by 2023.
WJCT News of Jacksonville, Florida, reports a land-based fish farm in Indiana is preparing the first commercial harvest of its genetically engineered salmon. Aqua Bounty's fish is the first genetically modified animal for human consumption on the U.S. market. The company said the full harvest, more than 5 tons, has already been sold. One of the largest wholesalers of seafood in the U.S., Samuels & Son Seafood, is among the companies purchasing the fish from Aqua Bounty after sampling the GMO salmon earlier this year. Aqua Bounty's CEO Sylvia Wolf said in a statement she's proud to see the company, quote, reach this important milestone using science and technology to provide sustainable seafood for a growing population, end quote.
At ExxonMobil's annual shareholders meeting recently, the shareholders voted to dump at least 2 members of the 12-member board of directors because of the company's poor response to the climate crisis. One of the investors, a small company called Engine One, recommended 4 new independent candidates for the board, supposedly all climate activists, replacing 4 of the current board members. Investors are increasingly disgruntled by how fossil fuel companies are contributing to the climate crisis, and several of the large investors went along with the recommendations. BlackRock, a financial giant with a large share in Exxon, and under pressure from citizens groups to respond appropriately to the climate crisis, said it decided to back three of the four Engine One board candidates. A leading advisory company for financial services has recommended voting for Engine One's candidates also. As of this writing, the votes are still being counted, but at least two of the four candidates have been voted in. The world's most powerful institutions, corporations, are beholden to their shareholders, who dictate what the board of directors should do. As Andrew Behar of the Coalition United for a Responsible Exxon said, quote, "Today, shareholders showed that when a company doesn't listen to them, when they continue to destroy our planet and continue to lose money doing it, they're going to need a new board of directors." End quote.
Coal is being increasingly abandoned as a means of power generation. Several studies have shown that wind and solar could provide all the power requirements for Indiana. Part of the planning for the future includes strengthening the grid so that we never experience an event like the one that occurred in Texas last winter. Indiana has plans for power security. Eco Report has covered some possible developments in the grid. One proposal is at a critical stage to bring wind power from western Kansas to Indiana. The Grain Belt Express is an approximately 800-mile high-voltage electric transmission line. If built, it would deliver up to 4,000 megawatts of low-cost, clean energy from western Kansas. This level of power delivery would cover the needs of 1.6 million homes. Grain Belt Express could play a major role in economic recovery in the Midwest by supporting thousands of jobs during construction. Furthermore, it would add broadband infrastructure along the line to support rural high-speed internet access, provide tax revenues in the tens of millions of dollars annually across local communities, and deliver billions of dollars in savings for energy customers. Wind power is now the least expensive method of power generation. The proposed route starts in the Dodge City area and proceeds northeast, crossing into Missouri north of Kansas City. From there, the line would go east through rural Missouri, then cross Illinois and join the grid in Indiana at Sullivan. From Sullivan, power can be delivered widely in Indiana or delivered to the East Coast or both. The issue of whether the project will move forward is Missouri. So far, the developer has not been able to use eminent domain to acquire the route across the state. This issue has been debated for several years and is likely near resolution one way or another.
Factory farms' toxic emissions of ammonia aren't being regulated by the federal government. Ammonia, released by manure and fertilizer, combines with other air pollutants like nitrogen to create small, dangerous particles that can drift for hundreds of miles. Factory farms are responsible for over 70% of the ammonia emissions in the U.S. A new report in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences details how agricultural air pollution, primarily ammonia from factory farms, accounts for more than 17,000 deaths each year in the U.S., more than coal-fired power plants. However, whereas pollution from power plants, factories, and vehicles is regulated under federal laws, the agricultural industry continues to skirt any regulations for the air pollution from factory farms. The EPA has long overlooked air pollution from factory farms. In 2005, the EPA and the agricultural industry made a deal to supposedly study air pollutants like ammonia from factory farms. 16 years later, EPA has failed to regulate this pollution. EPA has allowed thousands of factory farms to continue emitting it.
People are making a lot of noise about the cicadas that have emerged this year. We will see if observations made during previous emergences hold true. Field researchers had noticed that certain bird populations appeared to be lower in the years that periodical cicada broods emerged in their territories. Maybe the cicadas were the cause, but it was also possible the birds were being undercounted because scientists couldn't hear them as easily on their surveys, which often rely on identifying birds through their sounds. The researchers used data from the North American Breeding Bird Surveys, focusing on 24 insect-eating species that live in the periodical cicada range. It wasn't a sonic illusion. The numbers of 15 species appeared to ebb and flow in step with periodical cicada broods in their territory. Red-headed woodpecker, American crow, tufted titmouse, gray catbird, and brown thrasher populations were smaller in cicada years as compared to years without cicadas. Their numbers also appeared to spike the following year and then stabilize. The study also showed that the number of red-bellied woodpeckers, blue jays, common grackles, and brown-headed cowbirds in an area increased sharply 1 to 3 years following a feast of cicadas, then declined after that, suggesting that populations swelled to meet the abundance of food and then dwindled when not as many of their species survived during cicada off-years.
The Burnett Oil Company is seeking a 30-year permit to drill in Florida's Everglades. The area is sacred Seminole land. Further, the Everglades is exceedingly environmentally sensitive. It's home to black bears, the largest American alligator, and Florida panthers, which are so rare as to be nearly extinct. What's more, drilling would endanger the water supply for millions of Floridians. The Big Cypress Natural Preserve in the Everglades already has two drilling sites. Burnett wants to expand and develop entirely new areas for drilling in wetlands adjacent to a reservation housing the Miccosukee tribe. Burnett has proven itself not to be trustworthy. It has driven 33-ton vehicles off-road through the preserve's wetlands. Today, 4 years later, the company has done nothing to compensate for the damage it did. The U.S. Department of the Interior can block Burnett Oil's plans. The Biden administration has said it will conduct a comprehensive review of all federal oil and gas permitting. Environmentalists say Burnett's plans should be blocked until that review is complete and until the concerns of the affected tribes are addressed.
South Africa is taking steps to resolve its controversial captive lion industry, making headway in major conservation efforts. This response brings an end to the international treaty that bans the global sale of products made from big cats. Lion bones, teeth, and claws aren't supposed to be sold and traded globally, with the exception of products that come from South Africa, according to a report made by The Independent. These lion body parts are used in scientifically discredited medicine, according to Yale Environment 360, and the sale of them will no longer take place. This new policy change is not yet a law. In 2019, a panel started to review various policies related to the, quote, management, breeding, hunting, and trade of South Africa's elephants, lions, leopards, and rhinos, end quote, according to National Geographic. On May 2nd, South African Minister of Forestry, Fishers, and the Environment, Barbara Creasy, released a set of recommendations and hoped for key outcomes for the country's lion industry, including promoting, quote, human-wildlife coexistence, end quote. The South African government has banned the issuing of permits for breeding and is revoking current permits. Additionally, there is a recommended ban on hunting and interacting with captive lions, according to National Geographic. Quote, thousands of farmed lions are born into a life of misery in South Africa every year in cruel commercial breeding facilities, end quote. Edith Kabisimi, the wildlife campaign manager of the nonprofit World Animal Protection, wrote in an email to National Geographic. The only countries allowing hunting of lions are South Africa, Botswana, Namibia, and Zimbabwe.
The New York Times reports the pandemic abruptly slowed the global march of coal. But demand for the world's dirtiest fuel is forecast to soar this year, gravely undermining the chances of staving off the worst effects of global warming. Burning coal is the largest source of carbon dioxide emissions and, after a pandemic year retreat, demand for coal is set to rise by 4.5% this year, mainly to meet soaring electricity demand. Coal is at the crux of critical political decisions that government leaders need to make this year if they are to transition to a green economy. Scientists say greenhouse gas emissions need to be halved by 2030 in order for the world to have a fighting chance at limiting dangerous levels of warming. In some countries where new coal-fired power plants were only recently being built, plans for new ones have been shelved, as in South Africa, or reconsidered, as in Bangladesh, or facing funding troubles, as in Vietnam. In some countries, like India, existing power plants are running way below capacity and losing money. In others, like the United States, they're being decommissioned faster than ever. Coal is the lightning rod of climate diplomacy this year, as countries scramble to rebuild their economies after the coronavirus pandemic, while at the same time staving off the risks of a warming planet. The Biden administration has leaned on its allies, Japan and Korea, to stop financing coal use abroad, and it has repeatedly called out China for its soaring coal use. China is by far the largest consumer of coal and is still building coal-fired power plants at home and abroad.
Now it's time for your feature reports. WFHB correspondent Sophie Hall filed a report titled A Bright Future for Energy in Indiana, which features experts weighing in on the transition to solar energy in light of Duke Energy's $180 million solar investment. We turn to Sophie Hall for more.
Betty Lynch starts her day like anyone else. She flips on the lights, makes coffee, and watches the news. Some days, she cuts the grass or hops in her car and drives to work. But Lynch doesn't have to stop at the gas station on her way or worry about her energy bill later, because her electric car and home appliances are all powered by the solar panels on the roof of her home in Lawrence, Indiana.
I feel like I'm doing my part to not put a bunch of carbon and ugly stuff in the air.
A transition to solar and renewable energy in Indiana is on the horizon. A subsidiary of the Duke Energy Corporation, Duke Energy Renewables, has announced plans for the $180 million Hoosier Jack solar farm in Vigo and Sullivan counties. According to Tyler Kuhn, Duke Energy Renewables business development manager, the farm will exist on 1,500 acres of reclaimed surface coal mines and have the capacity to power 35,000 residences and businesses in Vigo and Sullivan counties. He claims that the project is their most advanced yet, but will not result in an increase in Hoosiers' energy bills.
Well, there's a lot of ways that a project like this, just by being in that area, is going to benefit the local community.
He says the areas surrounding the farm could see a 20-fold increase in property tax revenue, which would fund local schools and fire departments. The farm would also create 200 jobs for the two-year construction period and long-term opportunities for contractors in the area.
Taking the nation as a whole, there's more job growth in renewable than there are in coal, oil, and gas.
Peter Schubert, director for the Richard G. Lugar Center for Renewable Energy, says he has seen a quiet revolution of solar energy in Indiana over the past decade, particularly in the substantial fraction of Indianapolis's energy generation that has moved to solar. According to Schubert, much of the resistance to renewables comes from disinformation.
So it's there are some people or groups who are completely antithetical to renewable energy and will actively thwart those efforts. They will undermine those efforts. They will delay and disrupt those efforts. And they will use disinformation to convince people who may not have an awareness of both sides of an issue that wind turbines are evil and solar panels are taking jobs away.
Still, data like the Environmental Resilience Institute's Hoosier Life Survey shows that solar energy is popular among the majority of Hoosiers, regardless of political affiliation.
So it's not going to happen naturally on its own, but we think the conditions are certainly there for the state of Indiana to embrace pro-solar policies.
Zach Schalk, Indiana Program Director for Solar United Neighbors, says his organization believes that conditions are right in Indiana for the state to embrace green energy and pro-solar policies. Solar United Neighbors is a nonprofit organization that promotes and facilitates customer-owned solar, which allows people to power their homes with rooftop solar panels.
That helps to stimulate good-paying local jobs, that helps improve air and water quality and therefore community health. I mean, it also helps to build wealth in communities that that have been negatively impacted by our legacy of dirty fossil fuel energy generation.
Schalk says solar is the cheapest option at the utility scale, and that low cost, combined with changing customer preferences, is causing many utility companies to begin looking into renewable energy. Schalk also says that despite the cost of solar panels decreasing 90% in the past decade, rooftop solar is still a big investment. That is why he believes Indiana needs proactive policies and programs like community-owned solar, which would allow people to buy into a shared solar power grid.
That's all not going to happen naturally. We need proactive policies that are going to get us there. But if we do it right, everybody can benefit from the transformation to a clean, just, and equitable energy system.
As far as what exactly the future of energy will look like in Indiana, these experts are divided. Construction on the Hoosier Jack Solar Farm is planned for 2023, with energy generation beginning in 2024, according to the Tribune Star. Kuhn says that solar and wind energy will be needed to fill the void created by coal plants retiring in the coming decade. He sees a large wave of solar companies coming to Indiana in the next 5 years. Schubert is currently studying the use of abandoned coal mines for grid-scale energy storage, which he says could meet Indiana's manufacturing demands when combined with renewable energy. Schalk envisions an Indiana powered by rooftop and community-owned solar, but is unsure of what the future will bring.
These questions and problems feel really big. You know, the energy system is big and scary. Duke, the monopoly utility company, is big and scary. And it's really easy for people to kind of just feel small and insignificant in the face of those big, scary, immovable obstacles. But I think what folks should take away from it is that, you know, you're not alone. There are, you know, groups like Solar United Neighbors or Citizens Action Coalition or Hoosier Environmental Council, Sierra Club, all kinds of organizations that are already bringing people together who care about these issues and helping to organize them and give you a sense of your own power and help you figure these things out, help you answer the questions that you want to ask. So I think the biggest thing to take away is, you know, for folks who are interested in these questions to get involved with one of those groups. You know, whatever it is, whatever is available locally to you, you know, whether it's Solar United Neighbors, if you're really interested just in solar, Hoosier Environmental Council, if you're passionate about conservation and the environment more generally, Citizens Action Coalition, if you're, you know, really focused on consumer protection and other, you know, advocacy issues in that regard, find a community of people who are already focusing on these questions and join them and, be a part of the solution.
Betty Lynch doesn't start her day like everyone else because her life runs on solar. She is one of many Hoosiers looking to the future of energy, wondering what it might look like. So while her morning isn't typical now, she hopes it will be soon.
For EcoReport, I'm Sarah Callanan.
And I'm Patrick Callanan.
And now for our events calendar. The Bloomington Garden Club's 2021 Summer Garden Walk is scheduled to take place on Saturday, June 5th and Sunday, June 6th. Monroe County is following current local mask and safety guidelines. Please visit bloomingtongarden-club.org for more information.
Tiptoe through the trees at Paintown State Recreation Area on Friday, June 4th from 10 to 10:45 a.m. Meet at the campground playground to join the naturalists for a short walk to look at several native trees. Discover the important roles they play in the habitat and create your own mini-guide to tree ID along the way. Please arrive on time and wear a mask if you have not been vaccinated.
Cave Weekend at Spring Mill State Park will take place on Friday, June 4th at 4 p.m., Saturday, June 5th from 11 a.m. to 3:30 p.m., and Sunday, June 6th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All 3 days will include guided hikes to learn about the caves, discover hidden caves, enjoy cave programs, and special tours through Endless Cave. To get more information about Endless Cave trips, email Cherie at sbelt@dnr.in.gov.
Take a scavenger hunt at Goose Pond Fish and Wildlife Area on Saturday, June 5th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Stop by the visitor center and pick up a scavenger hunt sheet. If you take photos of everything on the list and show it to the naturalist, you will win a prize.
A beginner kayak class will take place at Monroe Lake at the Paintown State Recreation Area on Sunday, June 6th from 10 a.m. to noon. Sign up at bit.ly/begkayak-jun6-2021. Kayaks let you reach backwater areas and quiet bays. This workshop is specifically designed for beginners with zero paddling experience. You will learn basic paddling, safety skills, and supervised paddling time. Kayaks, life jackets, and paddles are provided.
And that wraps up our show for this week. Eco Report is brought to you in part by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
This week's headlines were written by Norm Holley and Linda Green. Today's feature was produced by WFHB reporter Sophie Hall. David Lyman wrote the script, and Linda Green and Patrick Callanan edited it. Juliana Daly compiled the events. Patrick Callanan produced and engineered today's show.
For WFHB, I'm Patrick Callanan.
And I'm Sarah Callanan.
And this is Eco Report.
You've been listening to the Eco Report,
a volunteer-powered production of Community Radio WFHB
in Bloomington, Indiana.
Available for download and podcast at news.wfhb.org.
Eco Report is your independent, ecologically inspired news source
for South Central Indiana,
bringing you news that the Earth wants you to hear.
Send your comments, suggestions, and story ideas
directly to the Eco Report staff.
The email address is
earth@wfhb.org.
That's earth@wfhb.org.